Maximum Credible Accident by John Howlett, with Hugh Dixon as Gordon Allen and Patricia Gallimore as Kate. Part 6. Et Lux Perpetua.
The original accident encompassed a time span of less than one quarter of a second. 24 hours later, three columns of steam roaring from pressure relief valves are still the only outward sign of anything wrong, apart from the country lanes of the Maremma lined with parked military vehicles and the fact that all Army and Air Force leave has been cancelled the length and breadth of Italy.
Sodium temperature holding at 70 degrees above normal. One steam generator and one primary pump out of action. Pumps were coasted down three times during the shift to raise sodium temperatures to 700, 725, and 750 degrees, without result. Personnel. One operator had to be taken off duty, suffering from strain. Shift times are to be reduced to 6 hours for the duration of the emergency. Estimated duration of the emergency, 15 years.
Delete the last sentence and file it in the log.
You have no sense of humour, Johnny.
Your family moved out this morning?
Damn right they moved out.
Senior personnel were specifically asked not to do anything that might precipitate alarm or panic.
I shouldn't think there's an intelligent engineer in the whole of this building who hasn't sent his family as far away as he possibly can.
Well, I haven't.
More fool you. I don't see big white American chief sharing danger with us any longer.
He's on his way back to London.
With his English girlfriend?
She's a senior British official.
Whoever she is, she's well out of this bloody mess.
Miss G, sir. She's calling from the airport in Rome. The white phone.
Thank you. Miss G.
Hello.
As soon as you arrive back, you're to go with Mr. Ridgway to his embassy. There'll be a legal team from the FCO there to help you draft outlines for an agreement with the Americans.
What about Gordon Allen?
Oh, he's out of the office working on his own document. No need to involve him in preliminaries. And incidentally, he knows nothing about what has happened at Segre.
Mums, has Dad taken the car?
Yes.
Oh, hell.
Well, it is his car, you know.
Where's he gone?
Joss is playing house cuppers and Daddy got fed up with his work. Did you want the car to go and see Mick?
Doesn't matter.
Might at least have chosen a boyfriend with a car of his own.
Drifts of autumn leaves against the fence. A low sun through empty poles in the hop field. The same pitch I played cuppers on 30 years ago.
Can't see much from the corner flag, Mr. Allen.
Hello. I only came along for a bit of fresh air. It's a bit claustrophobic working at home.
Yeah. What is your name? I can hardly call you Timothy.
Come on, Medway! Afraid we're on different sides today. Give it to Kong! Never quite lose the old house spirit. Must be 10 years since I was HM at Medway. Oh, give it to Kong! Kong's our secret weapon. 16 stone of solidified school meals. Even Joss couldn't stop him once he gets going.
Ah, that's right! Get yourself moving, Kong! Make the earth shake!
Oh, dear. Well, that was a bit of a thump. I think Joss must have got his head in front of Kong's knees.
Curb your paternal concern, Gordon. It wouldn't be part of the young gentleman's code for an anxious father to run onto the field of play, even if your youngest son is lying apparently lifeless on the ground with one cheek split open to the bone.
Stretcher, ref! Stretcher! It is always such a relief to have the parent on the spot. Usually when this sort of thing happens, mothers and fathers are somewhere the other side of Singapore.
Hello?
Hello, girl.
Where are you? Kate's been trying to get hold of you. Don't tell me the car's packed up again.
I'm with Joss. He took a bit of a bump in his game.
What? What's happened?
It's nothing to worry about.
Where are you?
At the K&S.
Hospital? Oh, my God.
They're putting a few stitches in a cut. There's really nothing to worry about, girl. Did Kate say where she was calling from?
Both parties to be committed to partnership for the building of the CDFR in Britain and a corresponding fast breeder in the United States. And that the partnership be divided equally, both in finance and in personnel, with responsibility for safety requirements, the concern of the home country in each case.
I should like to hear from the Italians how their partnership has worked out with the French before committing myself on that particular issue.
Yeah?
A phone call from Miss Kate G.
Oh.
Okay. Let's break for 10 minutes, and I'll see if I can rustle up some coffee.
Hello?
Kate? It's Gordon. Mary said you've been trying to call.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I panicked a bit. The PUS sent me to Grosvenor Square as soon as we got back.
You've been negotiating?
Only a draft. We're all gathering in the country tomorrow.
Yes, at the Foreign Secretary's pig farm. I have to drive there myself.
Pig farm?
The Whitehall joke. Actually, it's sheep and apple orchards. Sucking pig is his favourite meal.
Oh. I tried to call you from Heathrow. I'm sorry.
You could hardly refuse orders from our permanent secretary. I should have anticipated it. Having been so neatly manoeuvred out of London, I seem to be checkmate in about 3 moves.
You still have to report to the Secretary of State.
I have little faith in politicians, Kate.
You're going to advise Dr. Martin against the fast breeder?
If I do, I think you're the only person who really knows why.
Rewriting the laws of human survival?
That sounds a shade pretentious. I'm not yet one of your Jesuit priests. But yes, something like that, I suppose. I'm out of change.
Where are you?
How was Italy?
Oh, fine.
Goodbye, Kate.
Bye.
Thank you, Kate.
For what?
For saying nothing.
I'm suddenly beginning not to like myself very much. Perhaps you'd now like to tell me what has happened at Segrè.
Your head of department already knows about it and obviously considers it unimportant.
What about Gordon? He's writing a policy document without knowledge of what could be very relevant information.
You're fond of our Gordon, aren't you? Now, the last thing he needs is any more discouragement. The great British disease of prevarication, Kate. We don't have time.
We call it empiricism. And if Gordon has changed his mind, it won't be without very good reason.
What the hell is that noise?
Steam.
Is it normal?
No.
Is the steam radioactive?
I hope not. Hey, Geronimo, her ankles are getting to look like tree trunks. If she walks any further, she's going to be a cripple tomorrow.
So, do we lie down and sleep for the night?
Tomorrow, we take photographs of the reactor. Then back to the village to see if this Enzo Palerna is in a mood to talk.
If he ever gets my letter.
Sodium holding at 85 degrees over normal. Indication of faulty valve seals on number 3 primary pump.
Well, what do you expect? At this sort of heat and pressure, every single component is under stress.
Mail for you, Enzo. Came with this month's salary check.
Girlfriend writing to your business address, eh?
Ask security. I'm sure they've opened it.
Oh, good heavens, man. We do still respect privacy, eh?
Privacy and secrecy, but not human life.
Policy document, section 3. Security and civil rights. Para 1. Proliferation. Plutonium content of normal size fast breeder will be 5,000 kilograms. Estimated average loss factor, 1%. 1% of 5,000 kilograms equals 50 kilograms. Enough plutonium to make 6 decent-sized nuclear bombs. The dangers of plutonium demand absolute security. Absolute security is impossible, and even adequate security will mean unacceptable infringement of individual liberty and intrusion into private lives.
Scribbling government policy on the back of an old envelope, Mr. Raylan.
How's the boy?
They're still doing tests on him. I'm trying not to have awful premonitions of brain damage or paralysis.
Yes, a very bright young man. Wouldn't want anything to happen to him. Be no trouble getting him into Oxford. Better try and edge him into nuclear physics. Then he can join the fast breeder program when he graduates.
If there still is a fast breeder program by then?
Oh, dear. And their official minds aren't changing, are they?
I don't suppose so.
Oh, the human mind has never turned back before, never retreated. We're not retreating, are we?
Mr. Aylin, Your son's rejoined the world of the living. If you'd like to come and see him.
Thank you, Doctor.
You go on in. I'll wait here.
We'll be keeping him in tonight. He has very severe concussion.
Hello, Dad. Did I stop that elephant?
Knocked him for six.
I'll break his bloody kneecaps next time I see him.
You shouldn't have got your head in their way.
I funked it, that's why. Tried to duck out of the tackle at the last moment. Human error or act of God?
Funk? Human error, I'm afraid, Joss.
Is that stitches? Ooh, better not let Mum see me like this.
Tim Finn's here to visit you.
Did he give you a lecture on fast breeders?
The subject did happen to crop up, yes. I think he disapproves of my lack of enthusiasm.
Tin Fin believes in the irresistible progress of the human mind.
So he made clear. I'll send him in. He can give you a lecture on the art of the flying tackle. Perhaps Roxy will come along later and bring you some clothes.
I hope that lovely doctor holds my hand all night. Dad, are you really going to say no to it?
Say no to what?
The breeder.
Looks like it.
You're going to try and stop it?
Yes. Yes, Joss, I'm going to try and stop it. Energy forecasts, toxicity proliferation, problems of security, and the unsolved question of waste disposal are the decisive arguments on the negative side of this debate. The Secretary of State is advised to postpone indefinitely any commitment to the building of the fast breeder and to refuse the partnership sought after by the Americans.
Are you going to be up much longer with them?
Half the night.
Shall I make you some coffee?
Mary, it was a bang on the head and a cut under his eye. He's going to be all right.
What about you? Are you still contemplating the abyss?
It might not come to that.
And if it does?
We shall somehow manage. Could be a slogan for the fast breeder, couldn't it?
What?
Et lux perpetua. Either a slogan or a terrible warning. And all I can see through the uncurtained window is the moon rising behind the skeleton of Pendle's dead elm tree.
Is that coffee?
How's Joss?
Looking like he was mugged by a gorilla. I have to pick him up tomorrow afternoon. Don't tell me Dad's using your old typewriter. Mum's? What's the matter?
Look after the coffee, will you? Take it into Daddy when it's ready.
Are you crying? Mummy?
Coffee?
Thank you, Roxy.
Does Mum think Joss is dying or something?
Why?
She's in a hell of a state about something.
About me, I think.
What have you done?
Nothing yet. How is Joss?
Belligerent. He told me to stop hiding myself with you, so that you acknowledge my situation and find some way of letting Mum's come to terms with it.
You mean about you and your chosen career with Mick?
I mean about me being gay, don't I?
Good heavens.
I didn't even know he knew. Shows what a good knock on the head can do for you. Oh, and he said to tell you not to funk your tackle.
So, stay here and talk.
Oh, I can wait. He didn't mean me. He meant you and your typewriter. And your fast breeders. And your conscience.
...5:43 Saturday morning. Dawn in Tuscany. The reactor enters the penultimate phase of crisis. Another attempt to raise sodium temperatures well in excess of normal operating levels opens a tiny hairline fracture in one of the secondary sodium circuits at the point where heat is transferred from sodium to water. The sodium reacts explosively with the water, and the number three generator has to be isolated and shut down. There are now only two generators left in operation. After communication with military authorities in Rome, preparations for a general evacuation are resumed with urgency.
You're not asleep?
The noise has changed. See? When we arrived, there were three columns of steam. Now there are only two.
What does it mean?
No idea. I'm not going to be able to walk on that ankle.
No. Time to say goodbye, American boy. While my bearded friend is still sleeping.
So you're his prisoner as well?
No. He is my guardian. The police and the army have been looking for me for a long time. You go now. You walk back to the village where we left the car. 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, you meet this Enzo Falerna in the little trattoria where the blind man plays his guitar. Can you find your way?
Yes. How do you get back if you can't walk? The whole place is calling with soldiers.
It does not concern you.
Thank you for your help, Anna.
One a day, you will also learn to believe in violence, American boy. One day, when you wake up, you find the same fat cats in charge of both heaven and hell.
I put your Mr. Aylan in the conservatory. Dr. Martin will join him there when he's read Aylan's policy document.
Kate G and Mr. Ridgway should be here by midday, Foreign Secretary.
No news from Italy?
No.
What about Mr. Aylan's policy document?
Negative.
And your Secretary of State?
Dr. Martin is not the kamikaze type.
Ah, hello, Gordon.
Secretary of State?
Well, you were quite right about the Chancellor being here. I've had the stick from him and his Treasury men, the carrot from Trade and Industry, and a lot of smooth chat from Audish and Environment. I feel like a little boy on the nursery floor with my five elder brothers on top of me. Oh, a bit chilly in here, isn't it?
Foreign Office tactics, perhaps. Huh. Psychological warfare.
Look, I wish it wasn't so difficult not to be totally honest with you, Gordon. I wish I could reject your policy document with some pretense of sincerity. You've come round full circle in just 7 days.
With some encouragement from you, Secretary of State?
Yes, I admit to bombarding you with the seeds of doubt, but you see, I now have to ask myself what would happen if I accepted your document and refused to negotiate with the Americans.
The Foreign Secretary would force it into full cabinet.
Where I would be comprehensively outvoted. I'd then either have to accept the cabinet decision or resign.
Which would make two of us.
No, you certainly will not. Civil servants do not resign. And I have to say that in this particular instance, I cannot see what would be accomplished by my resignation.
I don't wish to complicate your situation, Secretary of State, but I should like it clearly understood that if the government chooses to ignore the arguments laid out in this policy document, then I shall feel obliged to resign in as noisy and messy a way as possible.
Do you realize what resignation would mean for you?
I am uncomfortably aware, yes.
The 10 best years of your career sacrificed. Quite apart from the financial consequences to your family, it's out of the question. I reject your policy document, and I expect you now to accompany me to the Foreign Secretary and supervise negotiations with the Americans.
In that case, I have no choice but to convey to the Permanent Secretary my letter of resignation. Perhaps the pig farmer will now let you adjourn to a warmer room for your next meeting.
There's been a message through the Ministry of Defence. Apparently evacuation has been resumed in Tuscany. The situation at Segre is critical.
If anything really bad happens out there, it would mean not only the end of these negotiations, but the finish of nuclear power in Europe for the foreseeable future. Quite absurd that we should be at the mercy of a runaway French machine 1,000 miles away.
The end comes as swift and silent as the beginning, and within a time span of less than 1/100th of a second, the steel sheath of another damaged fuel pin finally gives way, spilling fuel pellets into a critical pattern that causes an instantaneous explosion, shaking the entire fuel core like a leaf in the wind. A second, larger, and apocalyptic explosion now seems inevitable.
If the excursion hooter ever blows, repeat after me, our Father, who art in heaven.
We're going.
Who turned off the alarm?
No one touched it.
The computer's printing. It's come back to life.
Enzo, we have three greens on the control
rods. Four greens.
The explosion must have knocked them back in.
Four control rods have dropped in. Gentlemen, the reactor has shut down.
Foreign Secretary, Mr. Ridgway.
How you do?
An honor to know you, sir.
Kate G., Assistant Secretary in charge of the Fast Breeder.
Oh, we've been hearing wonderful things about you, Miss G. Since both you people were out in Italy, I'm sure you'll be very pleased to know that the reactor at Segre has managed to shut itself down. Status quo ante bellum. Another little fuss that time will erode. If you will excuse me.
What did he mean, Segre managed to shut itself down?
Just what he said.
Do you mean to tell me they actually lost control of that reactor?
Not so loud, Kate. Thus is history made, my sweet girl. Not with a bang, but with whispers.
Gentlemen, this is by way of a short debriefing before you return to your homes. I would like you all to regard the last 2 days as something of a major triumph.
Johnny, is he kidding?
We have come through a major technical crisis without endangering the public.
So why did we twice mobilize for evacuation?
An extreme and, as it turned out, unnecessary precaution, which with any luck will go unnoticed. I should also mention that the troops on evacuation duty have quite by chance discovered and arrested two major terrorists in the vicinity of the perimeter fence, thus giving the authorities the perfect justification for all this military activity. A press statement about the shutdown will mention only the fact of sodium fires in two of the generators. This may be something a little less than the truth, but of course it will be many months before we ourselves know what has really happened.
Statement of Enzo Falerna, senior operator. I am writing to correct deliberate omissions in the official press release issued by the management at Segre earlier today. The sodium fires were in fact relatively minor incidents, provoked by a major accident inside the fuel core. An explosion that distorted control rod mechanisms, preventing them from dropping into the core. As a result, the operators lost all control over the reactor for 2 whole days. Control was only re-established quite fortuitously as the result of a second explosion. This accident has effectively undermined the whole principle of safeguard and control, not only in fast breeders, but in every other nuclear reactor dependent on a conventional control rod system. All right, Mr. American Journalist. Let's just see if you do turn up.
Mr. Allen, I'm Salter. This is Donaghy of the Friends of the Earth.
We know each other from the Inquiry.
Indeed.
My son told me there was an American journalist with you.
He's in Italy.
This is a copy of my letter of resignation. Mm-hmm. And this, the policy document that has been rejected by the government.
No second thoughts. I wouldn't want to push something onto the front pages of the Sunday papers and have you chicken out and deny it by lunchtime.
But don't be so bloody facetious, Salter. Mr. Allen's a highly respected senior civil servant. He's not one of your reprobate pop stars.
You can be sure, Mr. Salter, that having come this far, it's no longer possible for me to turn back.
I should like to say, sir, that the world one day might owe you an enormous debt of gratitude for what you are doing.
Knowing how the world's wheels turn, I somehow doubt that, Mr. Donaghy. I'm very much afraid that it will turn out to have been a wholly useless and futile gesture.
Enzo Falerna,
turn your back on me. I have written out a statement of what has happened. I shall leave it under the newspaper as I walk away. Do with it what you will.
I'd like to talk to you.
Get your ass out of here before you're picked up like your friends were picked up.
My friends?
It's all over the front page. The girl they call Anna.
Daddy, wounded soldiers, come home.
Hello, Dad.
Gordon.
Hello, girl.
Are you all right?
Just about.
Unemployed?
Voluntarily. As of midday.
Hold my hand.
In the final part of Maximum Credible Accident by John Howlett, Gordon Aylan was played by Hugh Dixon, Kate by Patricia Gallimore, and the voice of Muff by Hayden Jones. Dr. Martin, Michael N. Harbour, Mary, Patricia Gibson, Enzo, Terry Molloy, Gianni, Nigel Lambert, Dave Ridgway, Blaine Fairman, Audish, Mark Woolgar, the Permanent Undersecretary, Anthony Benson, Henshaw, Kerry Shale, Anna, Anna Lindup, Tinfin, Garard Green, Roxy, Kim Durham, Salter, Simon Carter, and Donaghy, Graham Padden. The theme music was composed by Robert Campbell and Michael Shepherd. The serial was directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine.